Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we continue our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, as we're talking to every New York City Council Member this year, all 46 Democrats, all 5 Republicans, touching every neighborhood in this year when most of the council is new because of term limits, and it's majority female for the first time ever. Today we're happy to welcome one of those new and female members, Pierina Sanchez from District 14 in the Bronx, which covers Kingsbridge, Fordham, University Heights, Mount Eden, and Mount Hope. For those of you who only drive by the Bronx, if you're going up the Deegan, this is the district that runs just to the right of the highway from around the Cross Bronx Expressway up until just before Van Cortlandt Park. Councilmember Sanchez grew up around there, went to PS 46, not far from Fordham University, but went to Harvard undergrad, Princeton for grad school. She was an advisor to Mayor de Blasio, where her bio says she advocated for progressive housing, economic development, and land use policies and resources for NYCHA, among other things. Councilmember Sanchez, thanks for joining our 51 Council Members in 52 Week series. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you so much for having me.
The bit of your bio that I did there, did I get that much right?
That's right. The only thing I would say is that if you're driving by the 14th District, you should stop in because we're amazing and we're the best.
That's the right answer. What was it like growing up there in the Fordham area and going to PS 46, also I believe known as the Edgar Allan Poe School?
That's right. That's right. Poetry school. It was two things, Brian. One, it was incredibly happy, filled with family, filled with love, filled with District 14's music, food. There's a huge Dominican community, Puerto Rican, African-American. We are about 97-98% people of color. And so there was just a lot of, vibrancy in the community. But at the same time, we went through a lot. My family comes from the Dominican Republic, very humble roots. And we struggled with rent. We struggled with landlord harassment. The many issues that are still facing neighbors today. That's how I grew up, And so for me, constituents who walk into the office, that's my tía, that's my primo, because we've been through so much together. And it's why I fight today.
Who lives in District 14, demographically, or any way that you would like to describe who you feel you were elected to represent?
A beautiful, incredible, resilient people who make lemonade every single day from lemons. We are 45% foreign-born. We are about 70% Latino, so the majority of which are from the Dominican Republic, but then you have many Puerto Ricans, Colombians, Mexican, and then we have a growing West African population, as well as African American and Caribbean Black, like Jamaicans. It's a beautiful, beautiful community, of strivers is what I always say. If you close your eyes and you think about New York City during the pandemic, that was not District 14. We never stopped. We were always working. We are essential workers. And so, we're a community of workers and strivers.
As a measure of what's urgent for people in your district, what have your constituents contacted you about the most since you took office in January?
Housing, and then some more housing, and then food insecurity. But absolutely, it's housing day in and day out. I can't afford my rent. The ERAP program hasn't been responsive to me. We're behind. We're facing eviction. Our landlord is not providing heat and hot water. There's rodents. It's housing quality and housing concerns. Big issues of affordability in our community.
And you told us off the air before the segment that your top priority is for real and deep affordable housing. How far are we from that in your district today in terms of who pays how much of their income for rent?
That's absolutely right, Brian. And we're a ways away. So before the pandemic, District 14, like many, we're a low-income community, right? Our median income is $21,000 a year for a worker. And so before the pandemic, we had a rate of 70% of our households, we're one income shock away from crisis, right? Whether that's falling behind on their rent and then facing eviction, or getting sick and not being able to work and similarly being economically destabilized. And so that figure looms large, and it happened, right? COVID-19 happened. And so, you know, the Bronx has, you know, something like double the unemployment rate of the city of New York, and the city of New York is lagging in the nation for a variety of reasons. And it's always that story that the Bronx, and it's driven by communities like mine in the West Bronx, you know, where we just face such stark inequalities. And so we have a huge affordability gap, and I always get, you know, I talk to neighbors and they're like, "You're crazy. Like, why would you do this? Why would you run for office?" And I'm like, "Well, we got to do something, right?" You know, saying the affordable housing crisis in New York City is not worth tackling and affordable housing is not worth working on is like saying, like, why be a doctor? Why be a scientist? Like, you're never going to solve disease, right? No, you still have to do it, and you can save people in the process. And that's really what drives me, you know, in fighting for affordable housing. It turned out to be my career. I came fresh out of college, graduated from Harvard, which was a whole nother weird thing coming from the hood to go to Harvard and then to come back. And it was, I worked for the local council member, so full circle. And it was the thing that kept me the most busy then. And, you know, I've been working on affordable housing policy, economic development, and really urban planning ever since, you know.
My guest, if you're just joining us, is Piadina Sanchez, city council member from District 14 in the Bronx, which covers Kingsbridge, Fordham, University Heights, Mount Edom, and Mount Hope, as we are in our 51 council members in 52 weeks series. So let me get at what you think a real and deep affordable housing policy would look like compared to what we have now this way. The state just passed this big new budget, as you know, and Governor Hochul was on the show yesterday, and she touted some of the housing portions of the budget like this.
I have a strong commitment to achieving affordable housing for all, and that is why I have literally $25 billion, unprecedented amount of money on the table for a housing plan with 100,000 affordable homes, and that does include 100,000 units of supportive housing, much of which will go for people with substance abuse problems, mental health challenges, people who've been recently incarcerated. I really want to make sure those who are back in our community have a chance to live a full life and get a job and have a home.
Governor Hochul here yesterday. Councilmember, how far does that go to meet what you would like to see?
So first and foremost, that is fantastic. $25 billion coming in from the state is a record amount coming into us. You know, we have to be in close coordination with them. But you know what, Brian? We also spend $17 billion in tax expenditure every year on a program called 421A, a tax expenditure that, you know, we give tax breaks to developers to build new housing in the city of New York. It's supposed to be affordable housing, but almost 60% of that is out of reach for most New Yorkers. You know, it's built at 130% of AMI, which, if you're a normal person and don't speak in terms of AMI, you know, is not affordable to the vast majority of New Yorkers and is affordable to no one in District 14. And so we, at the same time as, you know, it's fantastic that the governor is putting more resources into affordable housing, supportive housing, which is sorely needed. We have a major gap. We also have to calibrate our tax incentives, right, to make sure that we're getting what we need. And we have an opportunity to do that because 421A as a program expires on June 15 of this year. And so, you know, that's certainly going to be a very big conversation because she's putting in, the state is putting in $25 billion, but every single year, we spend $17 billion in tax expenditures and we're not actually getting the affordability that we need, right? When we talk about, you know, solving and dealing with the affordable housing crisis, you know, we're in a capitalist society, right? Capitalism and our society is going to deliver for certain income levels, and it is not ever going to deliver for the lowest incomes, right? And so when we talk about how we use the resources that we have, our tax expenditures, our subsidies, you know, things, the money that comes down from the federal government in terms of now federal stimulus, but also LIHTC, right, which has been funding affordable housing throughout the country since 1986 tax reform, you know, we have to be really prudent about how we use those dollars, right? And it's like, you know, I call it dating with strings attached. If you want subsidies from the state or from the city or from the federal government, there should be real strings attached that are going to get us as a society, as a, you know, as a city, the things that we need in the city of New York.
So on 421A, which expires in its current form in June, as you say, if the current tax break system subsidizes developers to build quote unquote affordable housing that isn't affordable enough to enough New Yorkers, there's a debate among activists, as I'm sure you know, should 421A just be scrapped or should it be revised so that in order to qualify for those tax breaks, the developers have to build more deeply affordable housing for more people? Which side of that are you on?
Ooh, you're gonna get me in trouble. Well, look, I fundamentally, we need a program like 421A that does the right thing, right? But what I hear activists saying, what I hear some of my colleagues saying in elected office is, you know, there's a lot of problems with taxation in New York City, with our property tax system, and with the way that we, you know, have inequities throughout it, right? We treat homeowners differently than renters. We treat co-op owners differently than commercial properties, mm-hmm. in ways that are inequitable, right? So I hear and I respect and I actually think it's something that we should do is address the bigger picture of property tax reform. But I do think that on the narrow question of a tax incentive program that builds the bulk of housing in the city of New York, you know, we have to get that right. So, you know, for me, the priority is let's get it right. You know, let's target those deep affordability levels that the market is not going to deliver on, you know, and let's have those conversations in the context of all of the different, you know, tools that we have at our disposal. But I do think that 421A or 485W or, you know, some version of a tax expenditure that helps us to build deeply affordable housing is important in the toolkit for new construction in New York City.
All right. Now you're in trouble with somebody, but probably not a lot of people. And listeners, we're obviously going to follow this. This is such a big thing for New York City and New York State. We're going to follow this as the June deadline approaches for the state legislature to change or just renew or scrap altogether that 421A law that's supposed to create a lot of new affordable housing. Councilmember, let me shift to the topic of crime. In the previous segment, we talked about how besides the subway shooting, there were 8 other shootings in the city in the 24 hours that followed the subway shooting, including 3 people killed in separate incidents in the Bronx, all in their early 20s. Were any of those in your district? Do you know?
No, but we did have a fatal shooting just last week of Doña Juana Perdomo, who passed away after a stray bullet, you know, from an unrelated altercation hit her last week. And so we're very much feeling it. And, you know, we're all on Citizen in District 14, I think, unfortunately, in some ways, and we're constantly getting alerts. So there's a lot of, you know, tension and fear in our community.
So how supportive are you? How supportive do you think your constituents in your Bronx district are of Mayor Adams' anti-gun violence policies, including the ones that are breaking out as the most controversial, what he wanted with bail reform and the anti-crime neighborhood safety teams, as he calls them? How supportive are you? How torn between fear of civilian crime and fear of over-policing are your constituents?
Yeah, no, I appreciate this conversation, and it's one that we're having every single day in the community. You know, I think for me, the most important thing is just to not lose sight of where we are in historical context, what the data and the research and just history tells us, right? Which is you have less crime, you have less fewer gun crimes and all of this when the economy is better, right? And so let's keep that in the back pocket, right? We have to do everything that we can to get our city back on track from an economic standpoint. Reducing inequality and all of this, but I will say very honestly that, you know, my community, you know, I have the folks that walk into my office, a lot of older, you know, older women, Latinas, African American, and things like that, and they tell me, they're like, you know, we're scared, you know, we can you get us more police presence, can you get us more folks, you know, I want one in my corner, right? And so, you know, for me, it's this constant, you know, tug of war between knowing that what we really need to do is we need to be addressing the economy. We need to get guns off our streets. We know that they're not coming from New York City. They're coming from elsewhere. So coordination with state and federal agencies on getting guns off our streets, it's going to be really critical. But then on the other hand, we know, and this is something that I really focused on in graduate school, is looking at, you know, the crime drop in America from the 90s onward, right? And looking at programs like Cure Violence and Ceasefire and these programs, these interventions that try novel ways to reduce violence. And we know two things. We know, one, that they really work, right? When you go after those folks that are the most violent and the most likely to be perpetrating violence at the community level. And you do that with intelligence and tactics and all of that, you know, it's really meaningful to go after them with police, and it's really meaningful to go after them, you know, I think almost even more so because it's preventative with cure violence organizations and community organizations. And then on the other hand, you know, we know that just boots on the ground, just visibility of police, you know, has not proven to do much at all, right? So to the extent, you know, that NST is going to be, the neighborhood safety teams are going to be tactical and targeted and thinking like very strategically about who it is that they're looking at and going after, I think it could help. Although I have a lot of nervousness, right? Because the history of these kinds of teams before they used to not be uniformed is a lot of, you know, civil rights violations and abuses, right? And so that's completely concerning to me. But, you know, where my community is, and then, you know, thinking about that, if you're tactical, you can really reduce violence at the community level. Okay, and then let's couple that with cure violence organizations, with ceasefire, with other interventions that are going to stop the violence before it even starts.
A few minutes left with Councilmember Sanchez from the Bronx in our 51 Council Members in 52 Week series. Just one follow-up on that. Let me play you a clip of Mayor Adams on those Tuesday night shootings. He's on New York One here and being provocative.
Where are all those who stated Black Lives Matter? Then go do an analysis of who was killed or shot last night. I was up all night speaking to my commanders in the Bronx, in Brooklyn. The victims were Black. Many of the shooters were Black.
What do you think as a representative of a largely Black and Latino district when you hear the mayor say that and when statistically he's correct?
You know, he's right. He's right. And again, you know, for me, it's going back to those drivers. You know, I'm sort of in an odd way comforted looking at just a few years ago, 2018. 2018 was one of the least violent years in the record of New York City, right? Since we started recording crime statistics and crime data, you know, and we look at what was going on at the policy level, we look at what's going on the economic level, and we see a couple of things. You know, the economy was doing well. Inequality indices were trending in the positive direction, inequality was going down. And then on the policy level, in terms of public safety, arrests were down. Stop and frisk is gone. You know, we have fewer arrests, we have fewer convictions, we have all of these things. Everything was going in the same direction at the same time in the way that works, right? And that to me is the perfect example and what I always say to my neighbors about how we have to keep our eyes on the prize. Like we have to keep in mind the big picture. Yes, it's us. we're suffering, right? I'm suffering. The shooting of Doña Juana, who, by the way, is my mother's age and could have easily been my mom because it was right by the train station, was two blocks away from where I live. My staff member was walking by and heard the shots, right? There's nobody that can come to District 14 or come to me and be like, you don't know what, no, I am living this every single day. I live next to one of the most dangerous intersections and high crime areas in my community on purpose. And that's where my office is, right? But the thing here is that it's not, I don't blame that kid for being there entirely, right? That kid is growing up in a community, is growing up in a society, is growing up in a country that is completely oppressing us and not letting us have opportunities. In high school, I had a high school sweetheart that went off to Rikers when I was getting ready to go to Harvard. There's no difference between us. I'm not better than anyone, right? The only difference is opportunity. Only difference is what we're doing at the macro level to provide opportunities. And I know in my heart of hearts and through conversations with the mayor, I know he believes that. And I know he knows that. And I know that that we are aligned on this. And so, you know, there's kind of like, you know, I call it, I always go back to the medical analogies, right? You're in a hospital and you have a patient that is bleeding out, right? Literally, they have a gunshot wound and they're bleeding out. There's someone else who has, you know, a slow burning cancer. Which one does the doctor address? You have to address both. Yes, right now, today, you have to address that gunshot wound because you don't want to lose that individual now. That is the violence that is going on in our communities now. And that is what the mayor is responding to. But we both well know, and so many of us in the city know, that there's also a cancer. And that cancer is the thing that we have to address. That's the inequality. That is the lack of opportunity. And that is the eyes on the prize for me for what we really have to focus on. So I'm not going to take away from, you know, a focus on public safety and what can we do right now to get these guns off the streets right now and reduce these numbers right now. But I know ultimately, and I know that so many New Yorkers do, that this is a much bigger problem. And we can't let this false dichotomy divide us, because we have to address what is at the root.
A powerful way to end our latest 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks segment with Piedita Ana Sanchez, the new council member from District 14 in the Bronx. Council member, thank you so much. We look forward to having you on through your 4-year term. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Brian. Take care.